Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Tends to hurt in a different way than a younger divorce, where people are more focused on the young children and what is going to be the fallout of that. But when you're older, you worry about being lonely. You worry about getting older and being sick, and who will take care of me? And you worry, can you really start over again at this late stage? And it is very painful to split up from a spouse that you've really been with essentially your whole life.
That's psychiatrist Dr. Gail Saltz on NBC's Today Show, talking recently about what they're calling gray divorce. The aging baby boomers, the leading edge of the baby boom generation, now in their 60s, waiting a long time, but then in the end, after 35, 40 years of marriage perhaps, calling it quits and getting a divorce. Of course, this is occasioned by a very famous separation. Al and Tipper Gore kind of shocked everyone after, I think, more than 40 years of marriage, saying, no, not anymore. And they are not unique. They're actually part of a trend being noticed. Joining us to talk about gray divorce, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris. She's founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities. And she's authored several books, including Love and Economics and Smart Sex. Jennifer, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
You know what I found remarkable about the interview on the Today Show? To a psychiatrist and a contributing reporter talking about the facts of gray divorce. They dealt with it as a fact. The question was never asked, why are people divorcing after 35, 40 plus years of marriages? It said, well, you know, it's tough. It's different from young divorce. And here's all the ways that you can get yourself back out in the single scene if you're 60 plus years old and your kids are out of the house.
You know, Todd, we must be friends for a long time because I had exactly that same reaction. You know, I'm thinking they're taking this as an accepted, accomplished fact and not asking why it's happening and not asking whether it's a good thing or not, or what, you know, whether there's some other way to be looking at whatever the problem is that's driving this. Is there some other way to look at it? Is there some other way to deal with it? You're right. That whole segment, you know, I was waiting for somebody to ask those questions. You know, what kind of person is getting divorced after 20 or 30 years? What are the factors that go into that decision? What's driving them over the edge? You know, what is it? You know, and they didn't even talk about that. They just talked about, well, here's what to think about so that you don't get screwed in the financial settlement. You know, I was like, oh my goodness, that's really it's all this despair over marriage, you know, taken to a new level.
Some might say, look, if you're going to divorce, maybe it's best to wait until the kids are out of the house. And all you have to worry about are the financial problems, not about the children still in the house, still with one parent or the other during divorce. And maybe this is the way to do it. Stay together for the kids, sacrifice, and then, you know, if you're going to call it quits anyway, even if it's been 40 years, then now it's time to get on with your life. What do you say?
Yeah, you know what? That's a John Locke divorce. I don't know if any of your listeners ever read John Locke, Two Treatises of Government, in college or whatever. But, you know, he has this, he's like the only liberal author to really talk about divorce and marriage and everything. And he makes this point that, you know, once the kids are out of the nest, you can do what you want. You know, that's basically his argument. And so what you have to say about that is, of course, it's better to stay together for the sake of the kids than to split up while the kids are preschoolers or something, you know, so you have to respect that part of it. But you're still not asking the question of what's the social consequence of doing this? What's the consequence of living alone in your late years like that? What's happened to this relationship that it's no longer a source of solace or healing or friendship anymore? What has happened to that? And what does that mean to your children and your grandchildren to see their grandparents divorce, you know? That's a question nobody's asking or even taking seriously, you know, so much less we don't have an answer to it because we're not even asking that question, whether that matters. So I'll give it to you that it's probably better to wait than to do it when the kids are little, but still there are a lot of unanswered questions associated with that now.
If you were going to simply apply what you know about the state of marriage in America today, what you've learned in recent years, to this phenomenon of aging baby boomers saying, let's get a divorce, calling it quits after 35, 40 years of marriage, and answer the question, why these people, why now, why are they doing this? How would you answer that question?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Todd, and I'm going to answer it. Since I don't know of any social science on the question, so I'm not going to even pretend to offer that kind of explanation. Let's give a theological explanation, okay, for your listeners who are obviously theologically minded. I mean, one of the things that that the holy people have always taught us is that every moral act has within it the setting the stage for future moral acts, so that if you start with the idea that I'm entitled to get what I want and happiness means that I get what I want, and you act on that belief, every time you act on that belief, you're making yourself more and more into the type of person who believes that they're entitled to have what they want and that the world's about giving them what they want. And so what I believe is happening to us is that if you look at old people, they are the sort of extreme versions of whatever their personal philosophy was throughout their lives. So if you've got somebody who was, you know, striving for holiness and had some humility and was attempting to examine their faults and attempting to ask, well, what's the impact of my behavior on the people around me and what does love require of me now? When you take a person like that who's lived for a long time, they have become wise as an old person. You know, that's how you become a wise old person. But there are other old people who are crotchety and obnoxious and difficult, pain in the neck. And one element that goes into making you into a crotchety, mean old fart is when you believe that the world, that you're entitled to feel good all the time, that you don't think about the impact that your views, that your behavior has on others, and that you look at things and you say, well, what's in it for me? I have people in the economics profession and other parts of, you know, sort of the free market movement and so on. I know a lot of people who are deeply committed to the ideas of radical individualism in some form or fashion, and a lot of those people become really difficult old people. You know, you live like that for a lifetime, you know, going around thinking that if I just get what I want, everything will turn out okay in the end, that the invisible hand is all around me all the time, supporting me and doing what I want and turning every act of the will of mine into something socially constructive. You know, you live like that for a lifetime, you're going to be a really difficult pain in the neck by the time you're 80, you know. And a lot of those people are completely deluded about it. So I think that one thing that's happening to us in our generation is that the things that would help us to be wise old people as opposed to difficult old people, all of those ideas have been hidden from us. You know, we don't even realize what we're doing, you know. One time, Todd, I was in a meeting with about, I don't know, I suppose a dozen or a dozen and a half, you know, kind of fellow free market conservative libertarian type of people. And I these were guys I had known a long time, you know, and I looked around the room, and every man in the room who was my age or older was divorced. And I thought to myself, this is not a good testament to this way of living, you know, to libertarianism as a way of life, to individualism as a way of life. This is not a positive a testimony to that as a lifestyle, you know. And most of those fellows, when I try to talk to them about this sort of thing, of course, they're completely befuddled. They have no idea what I'm talking about.
Two quick questions. Do you think it has something to do with the baby boomers' loss of youth? And with the loss of youth, they say, well, what's life? I got to discover a whole new life here because I'm old and this person next to me in bed is old, and it's over with for us because we're old now. I guess we got to go separately learn how to live the lives of the elderly. About 30 seconds.
Well, in other words, you're saying that this generation doesn't really know how to confront old age. Is that really what your question is? You know, I think there's something to that. I think that that old age is a spooky thing if you don't have any kind of eternal perspective to your life. You know, if you think that the body is all that there is, then the deterioration of the body and the loss of your faculties is a very scary thing. And I think for many people of our generation, Todd, people don't have a good way to confront that, and they're just scared about it. You know, and so it may be that ditching the spouse is a way of of avoiding the problem of looking at that person next to you who's old and who's now a reflection on your own old age.
Folks, you can check out the website and the blog for Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse tonight. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Love and Economics and Smart Sex. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thanks, Todd.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk about the United Pentecostal Church, also known as Oneness Pentecostalism. Dr. H. Wayne House will be our guest. You know, it is difficult to be reminded that you're getting old, and there's no more stark reminder than the person that you wake up next to. If they look old, and then you saunter into the bathroom and find out that you look as old, if not older, than they, and you weren't prepared for it. You thought that you could hold on to that youth at least another 10 years, or maybe you could continue to tell yourself that 50 was the new 30 and then 60 was the new 40, and pretty soon you run out of decades to justify the fact that you're growing old. I can understand why someone unprepared for that life, unprepared for all the things that come with age, would say, you know, I got to start over again. I can't wake up next to an old woman or an old man another day. I can understand how they'd think that. It's still the rupture of a sacred trust, even when the kids are out of the house. I'm Todd Wilkin. Talk with you again tomorrow, and thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.